Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is one of the first major elections since Donald Trump was elected. Tonight, New Jersey sent an unmistakable message to the entire nation. We are better than this.
Virginia has told us to end the divisiveness, that we will not condone hatred and bigotry, and to end the politics that have torn this country apart.
We heard New Jersey's new governor-elect, Phil Murphy, followed by Virginia's new governor-elect, Ralph Northam. And don't get carried away, Democrats. You still have very little power in Washington as Trump remakes America in his image as fast as he can. And what happened yesterday is no guarantee at all that a blue wave will sweep over congressional elections next year. So much will happen between now and then. But something did happen yesterday in New Jersey, in Virginia, even in Nassau and Westchester County, in the county executive races. They were touched by Democrats' passion to go and vote for a Democrat, almost any Democrat, to say, we will not take this lying down. Good morning, everyone. Brian Lehrer with you on WNYC. One of our guests on election coverage last night, Greg David from Cranes, said the election in New Jersey, Nassau, Westchester, and suburbs elsewhere in the country was property taxes versus Trump. The Democrats ran against Trump. The Republicans said, no, 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 it's about property taxes. And Trump, as an issue, turned out to carry the day, at least in all three races around here and definitely in Virginia. I made a little mashup of my exchanges and campaign interviews these last few weeks with those three Republican candidates locally. And they followed a very similar pattern on the way to their defeats. They would not take a stand on the civil war that Steve Bannon has declared in their own party, and which Republicans like John McCain, Jeff Flake, Bob Corker, and the two George Bushes have taken sides on. But listen to our locals. You'll hear Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino and New Jersey gubernatorial candidate Kim Gordano at the end. This starts with the mayoral candidate, Nicole Malliotakis, when I asked her about accepting money from the Mercer family, which has been central to funding Breitbart.
I've never met Bob Mercer. They are just people that I think really want to see this city be a clean, safe environment for everyone. And I think that's why they're contributing to my campaign. But certainly I don't know them in a personal matter.
You're not aware that the Mercers fund Breitbart News and there's a war, a civil war is declared by Steve Bannon from Breitbart in the Republican Party?
I don't read Breitbart. I'm sure that, I never read Breitbart. So honestly, I don't know anything about it.
I lead by example. And this race is about what I have done as county executive, what I'll do the next 4 years, about the jobs that were created.
Do you think that exempts you from taking a stand on the Mercers who fund Breitbart and the alt-right hate?
We have no control whatsoever on what people spend on our behalf or for or against somebody else.
As you know, there is a civil war in the Republican Party, as declared by Steve Bannon, using the word war. Are you on a side in that war?
I'm on the side of the taxpayers, Brian. In New Jersey, in the gubernatorial race, it's all about taxes.
And forgive me, and you'll have plenty of time to compare your tax plans, but yeah. I think people also want to know, are you on a side that you're willing to declare in the Republican Party civil war?
No, I'm not on a side. I'm on the side of the taxpayers. So this isn't a debate in New Jersey about racism or bigotry, because there isn't any. This is a debate about issues that concern the working families of New Jersey.
Nice to know there's no bigotry or racism in New Jersey. Kim Gordano, preceded by the two recipients of financial support from Bob and Rebecca Mercer, Rob Astorino and Nicole Malliotakis. They never spoke up in the face of Trumpism, and they all lost their elections. Coming up at 10:30, Donna Brazile will join us, the former Democratic Party chair, with her new book about last year's election called Hacks, that is roiling the Democratic Party this week. By the way, Maine, which is a swing state, became the first state in the nation to pass a referendum adding themselves to Obamacare's expanded Medicaid program, which their Republican governor had refused to join. So that's another indication of what happened yesterday, and we'll talk to Donna Brazile about that. With me first, New Jersey Public Radio Managing Editor Nancy Solomon and Gotham Gazette Editor-in-Chief Ben Max, and we'll be joined in a few minutes by Deborah Lee Santos, who's Executive Editor of the Manhattan Times and the Bronx Free Press. Nancy, Ben, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, what happened in New Jersey, Nancy, and how much was it about Trump?
You know, I think it was about Trump, but I think it was also about Chris Christie, and you can't possibly sort of separate the two. But, you know, what we saw was, you know, we were expecting possibly historic low voter turnout, and that didn't happen. Democrats, the base, showed up. They showed up in pretty considerable numbers, and they voted the line. They voted right across the line, and the state Senate picked up a Democratic seat. It was already in the majority. The Assembly picked up two Democratic seats. The ballot question that would fund libraries, I mean, this is an issue of going into further debt, won. So I think what you saw was, you know, a gubernatorial candidate with a very liberal, very progressive agenda gets elected handily. And what people were saying when, this idea of Trump versus property taxes, I stood in front of my polling place in Maplewood. This is a very blue town, but it's also a highly, highly taxed town. You know, we're talking about property taxes that are up in the 20s. And
meaning
people,
$20,000 plus
a year. That's the more, you know, $2,000 a month you're paying on top of your mortgage for your property taxes. And, you know, not one person mentioned property taxes. And not one person mentioned Phil Murphy's name. They came up and they said, we need more Democrats, or I need to fight the Trump administration, or I'm sick of Chris Christie, or all of those things.
Listeners, 1 year ago this morning, some of you were listening, we opened the phones, not just for analysis of what happened in the 2016 election, but for how you were feeling. And we'll do the same thing today. Anything you are thinking or anything you are feeling about any of yesterday's results locally or nationally. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Give us a call or tweet at Brian Lehrer. Ben Max, Gotham Gazette primarily covers the city, but you've also been watching Nassau and Westchester. Both have had two terms of Republican county executives. Not anymore. What happened?
Yeah, two big Democratic wins in Nassau and Westchester. State Senator George Latimer took out two-term incumbent Rob Astorino, who many in New York City might also know because he challenged Governor Cuomo in 2014 and lost the gubernatorial race. He was looking at 2018 as well, and this will probably dash those aspirations for Astorino. Latimer will come in as a Democratic Westchester County executive. What's interesting there as well is that his state Senate seat will now be up for grabs. And in New York, as we know, the state Senate and also there's a number of House seats that will be up for election next year in swing districts. So that'll be interesting to watch. And that's a little bit of a challenge for Democrats going forward. In Nassau, you had Laura Curran beat former state Senator Jack Martins in what is sort of an open seat because the current county executive was not running for re-election because he's under indictment. So you had this Democratic wave in these two county exec seats that are very important positions, very powerful positions. And another big takeaway here, of course, is this Democratic wave going to then portend things for 2018 in the New York State Senate and in the New York House delegation?
And we should be careful on one thing about Nassau. Jack Martins, the last I looked, has not conceded.
That's true.
That race is within a few points. So we will see if those results hold. Do you know, by the way, if there's some contention in the counting? Because it looked like a 3-point margin, which should be enough for him to concede.
It looked like a wide enough margin, but I don't know if there's any details as to what they want to see. They just said, I believe I saw in at least one news report that they want to take stock this morning as to what might be out there, and that's their right.
And so yet to be totally confirmed, but here, listeners, maybe the first time you'll hear their voices, a few seconds each of the Westchester County executive-elect, George Latimer, followed by the apparent Nassau County executive-elect, Laura Curran.
We are going to be about jobs, about housing, about transportation, about healthcare, and taxes. We're going to show you in Westchester what we're going to show you in the nation in 3 years, how to run America the right way.
What I saw throughout this campaign was a common goal: to make Nassau County a better place for all our residents.
All right. And I'll come back to Virginia more when Donna Brazile comes on. But what happened there was big, partly because Loudoun County, suburban leaning toward exurban in Northern Virginia, went as big for the Democrat as it did, indicating moderates moved away from a Republican who tried to run on Trumpy issues and Trumpy advertising. And maybe even more indicative, the Virginia House of Delegates saw about a dozen votes swing to the Democrats, might even been 15, I saw published somewhere, though a few were still being counted. And national pundits were watching that for signs of deep moderate revulsion with Republicans or Democratic turnout in the era of Trump, and it happened more than they even thought it might. They said 10 would be a lot. It turned out at last count to be 15 seats the Republicans lost. And here's another aspect of that. As the Washington Post put it this morning about the Virginia legislature, quote, "The election signaled a major shift in the gender of a body long dominated by men. Of the 15 seats Democrats flipped, all were held by men and 11 were won by women." Several of those women made history. One became Virginia's first openly transgender person to win elective office, unseating an opponent of LGBT rights. I'm sure that was extremely sweet for that victor. Another became the first open lesbian elected to the House of Delegates. Another, the first Asian American woman. And two, both from diverse Prince William County, are set to be the first Latinas in the Virginia General Assembly. Nancy, your face looks like you didn't know all that.
It sounds so familiar, because what we've been seeing for the entire last year, since the election a year ago today, is a suburban revolt against Trumpism. And it's hard to know. I mean, is this really happening all over the country? I couldn't tell you, but I've seen it with my own eyes, and I've been following it in New Jersey for the last year. And it's suburban white women are leading this revolt, and they have become active. They're running as candidates. If I'm Rodney Frelinghuysen or Leonard Lance, I am shaking in my shoes this morning. Those are the two of the Republican congressmen in New Jersey, and they're facing a tidal wave right now. And yesterday it got buried in the election news, but Frank Lobiondo, one of four Republican congressmen in New Jersey, announced his retirement. He's not going to run for re-election in 2018. So, you know, this is, you know, and it played out last night as well. I mean, these groups aren't just gunning for 2018, these new activists. They're working on local races. They were working for Murphy. They got the Democratic vote out. You know, they're angry about Trump and they are active. So I think a case could be made that last night was the first sort of shot fired in this war.
Were you able to parse New Jersey results for gender turnout?
Not yet. I haven't seen the gender turnout. I think that we know that from the exit polling, I don't have gender numbers, I'm sorry. We know that Guadagno actually won the white vote with 53%, but did really poorly.
Oh, well, won 53% of white women.
Yeah,
she
this
won
was all white, I
all
have.
White. So she had a gender gap going into yesterday, so she may have lost among white women.
Right, and she lost among college-educated whites. So it's very similar to the Trump demographics in terms of her numbers of winning big among non-college-educated whites, but did very poorly among people of color, did very poorly among labor. And we also saw, you know, some of the Trump tactics, the racist flyers that targeted a Chinese-American and Indian-American school board candidate in Edison. Those two candidates won last night. And one of the top Republicans in the state Senate, an incumbent, lost to Vin Gopal, a South Asian candidate in Middlesex County. So it was not just a night for Democrats. It was a night for multicultural New Jersey.
Deborah in Jersey City. You're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
How you doing? I just wanted to say briefly that I am a registered Democrat. I am also but I have voted third party. I basically held my nose and voted for Phil Murphy, but I've had enough of Trump and his divisiveness. I've had enough of Christie. And if I soon to be ex-governor, Lieutenant ex-governor thinks that there's no racism in New Jersey, she needs to get her head out the sand because I don't know where she's been. And she ran a racist commercial, which I found highly disgusting.
Deborah, why do you say you held your nose and vote for Murphy?
Phil Murphy, basically because he really has no experience. He is a big business person, and I know he's going to raise a lot of taxes, and property taxes are high in Jersey City, but I wouldn't have voted for a Republican for dog catcher. And I have the last probably four or six governor's races, I've actually voted third party because I was not happy with either candidate. But there was no way I was voting for a Republican yesterday.
Deborah, thanks so much for starting us off. Elizabeth in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Brian. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi. So it's Elizabeth from NJ11th for Change. And we had a super exciting night last night. We were up in Morris County. We had dozens and dozens of first-time candidates that came from our grassroots group that were running for town council and board of education. And we won a town council seat, Amalia Duarte, in Mendham, in Christie's hometown, where they hadn't won a Democratic seat in decades. And that she was one of dozens. And then Michael Soriano, who's another diverse candidate. He's Puerto Rican, and he won the mayor of Parsippany, which is the biggest town in Morris County. So when Nancy said, first shot fired to Frelinghuysen, we feel very, very excited about the inroads. We also had races in Harding, where Frelinghuysen lives, two council members. They lost, but 37% in the absolute reddest little tiny town in New Jersey is thrilling for us, because every single vote in our favor is what we're looking for. We don't have to win every town, but getting five or six new town council and board of education members in Democratic seats where there never had been before just feels amazing.
Elizabeth, thank you so much. Really interesting, Nancy, that it's the moderate or mainstream Republicans in the House around the country who are going to be the most threatened, because either they're going to be challenged by Steve Bannon nationalists for being too moderate, or they're going to be potentially toppled in the blue wave by Democrats, like these House seats in New Jersey that we're talking about. These are not Bannon nationalists. These are some of the more moderate Republicans in Congress, but they're the most endangered.
Yeah, and it's very sad, because what we've seen over the last decade is the shrinking of the Northeast moderate Republican. That used to be Republicanism in the Northeast, were these moderates, and they're down to the last few, and they're, I would say, endangered species. And and they are in the crosshairs. There is no doubt. I mean, Rodney Frelinghuysen he's been threatened with losing his chairmanship of the House Appropriations Committee, which you got to figure he's been waiting for years. So he keeps being forced to vote against the interests of his district, because, people in New Jersey are super upset about this possible losing their tax deduction on their local and state taxes and property taxes. So he knows what he's doing when he has to vote for that, and he's just getting squeezed. There's no way out.
Now, I want to promote something that we're doing after the election of Phil Murphy as part of Voting Block, our collaborative reporting project on the governor's race involving 25 news organizations and dozens of neighbors. We want to know what your priorities are for the next New Jersey governor, Phil Murphy. Tell us what you want the next governor to focus on during his first 100 days in office. To add your voice, just text the word election to 862-800-2344. I'll give you that number again in a minute. You'll be prompted to answer a few quick questions by text message. We'll collect all the responses we get and add them to our voting block agenda. We'll make sure to deliver your priorities to help inform Governor-elect Murphy's new administration. So again, just text the word election to 862-800-2344, 862-800-2344. Still with us are New Jersey Public Radio Managing Editor Nancy Solomon, Gotham Gazette Editor Ben Max, and also joining us now, Deborah Lee Santos, Editor of the Bronx Free Press and the Manhattan Times, which serves Washington Heights and Inwood. Deborah Lee, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
And we didn't even talk yet about the reelection of Mayor de Blasio. So much else that's so big has been going on. How do you see last night's mayoral election results?
Well, you know, I think it speaks to what is fundamentally the party fluidity of New York and New York City voters. I think the idea that it was a remarkable feat that 32 years later is when we're actually having another conversation about a Democratic incumbent having, you know, retaken City Hall is something to look at.
In other words, not since Ed Koch got a re-election
precisely.
As a Democrat in the 1980s.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, for a city that's so consistently touted as a vanguard of progressive politics, you know, across the country, we're pretty comfortable, actually, as a body with a Republican mayor. Now, you can say that they're Republican light or Republican moderates or all the rest, but we clearly are not as fixed on party label as some might imagine. And so this idea that a Republican is toxic, that the label itself is just anathema to New York City voters, has been something that we have consistently debunked. So Maliotakis, I think, was not up against that particular challenge. I think she simply had to articulate a vision that was, you know, different than the one that he put out there, and it probably wasn't the year to do that. But I don't think it's about the Republican issue as starkly as it is across the country.
Ben, how do you see the mayor's race?
Well, I think we saw it's very clear that many, many New Yorkers are somewhere between okay with and enthusiastic about Bill de Blasio. He won 73% of the vote with lots of big promises in 2013, but hadn't shown anything yet that he could run anything or launch any programs or be the chief executive of the city. He had lots of ups and downs over the 4 years, but then got a high percentage of the vote again in the high 60s here. And many New Yorkers stayed home. Turnout is still bad, but in some ways that's indicative of the fact that the city is doing fairly well, that de Blasio has not been some kind of disaster. Again, he's had a mix of successes and failures. He's had ethical issues. However, many New Yorkers like the direction the city is heading. Crime is down. Jobs are up. De Blasio has offered programs to many, many different constituencies. He settled all the labor contracts, which are a huge part of his success and his popularity. So it's a pretty resounding win for him.
Is there a second term de Blasio agenda? Deborah Lee, I think when he came in the first time, he won so big in 2013, partly because he was very clear about things that he was running on that people wanted: universal pre-K, paid sick leave, raise the minimum wage, few other things. I don't know that we could identify one right now that will be a signature issue for term two.
Well, you know, here's what's interesting. I mean, there was clearly a lack of soaring rhetoric. There was not a lofty, aspirational feel about the evening last night, although Dante was there. You know, that was important visually. But there is a conversation to be had about what it looks like for him in terms of either leadership or legacy. And I think that's what he toggles back and forth about. You're right. I mean, he mentioned the millionaire's tax. He's obviously about to get into, you know, yet another pitched battle with the governor on a number of different fronts. But there wasn't that sense of the, you know, the tale of two cities. It wasn't Dickens. It wasn't quite that. And so the question becomes, you know, will he be able to identify himself? Actually, I think as much as people talk about him on the national stage, what does it look like for him locally when you look at Letitia James as a public advocate and Scott Stringer yet again as city controller? How quickly will, if the knives come out, I mean, that's a little bit jaded, but how quickly will those knives come out? How quickly will everyone else begin to identify themselves in contrast to him?
Why would the knives come out? They're all term limited, which means in part, if Letitia James or Scott Stringer want to run for mayor in 4 years, Bill de Blasio will not be their opponent.
Well, but he will be. I mean, he will be to this extent that there's a sort of a thematic conversation about him as a, I think he sees himself really very much as a progressive leader on the national front. What will they identify as then his fault, his flaws, in the way that Nicole Malliotakis has tried to do in this last stretch? What will be the things that they point to and say, I will do that entirely differently. I will not do it that way. And if he's in fact really busying himself on the national front, they'll be able to make quite a bit of hay, potentially. Now, that also includes other folks that we haven't mentioned yet, and that includes people like the borough president in the Bronx, Ruben Diaz Jr., who's been also mentioned repeatedly, and Hakeem Jeffries. We're getting back into the conversation about, can we have a more diverse administration in New York City?
And we certainly saw in New Jersey where Chris Christie's downfall began after his reelection, when he started to turn his attention more to his national aspirations. And by the end of all that, the exit polls in New Jersey showed Christie with a 19% approval rating. But Ben, want to get in on this as it pertains to de Blasio?
Yeah, sure. I just wanted to add, you know, we've seen someone who has had to really adjust to the realities of governing. He's had some struggles with that. He's had some successes. That's part of the reason the rhetoric has shifted. But he did talk in some fairly sweeping terms in his victory speech about making the city the fairest big city in the country. And that's sort of a big goal. He's gotten a little bit away from income inequality as he's seen how hard that is to shrink. But he, I would argue, does have a second term agenda. It's just not that sexy or exciting because it's a lot of deepening of what he's already been doing. But he's someone who came in and tried to put forth an agenda in a variety of directions that was a shift from his predecessor. So he unveiled a bunch of plans. It's, I think, a little bit unrealistic that he would have a huge slate of new ideas and go in a different direction.
We have a few minutes left. Then Donna Brazile, the former Democratic Party chair, is going to join us, talk about the election results. Yes, also her new book, which so is roiling both Clinton supporters and Bernie supporters from last year. Clinton support. Let me do this in the consistent way that's proper. Clinton supporters and Sanders supporters, or Bernie Sanders supporters and Hillary Clinton supporters. Everybody upset with Donna Brazile right now, but we will see what she has to say. But just to touch on a couple of other things real quick, Deborah Lee, the Constitutional Convention lost in New York 4-1.
Resounding.
80% to 20%.
You know, I wonder how much aversion to change Donald Trump has actually caused. I mean, I know that there's going to be a lot to be, there's a lot to be said for the union support and the vested interest. It was like a pitched battle between one vested interest group and another vested interest group. I mean, this idea that anyone was sacrosanct in this conversation is false. But I wonder how much people just didn't want, particularly here, to entertain the notion of that level of fundamental change. There's also the question of, some people raised the question about the inequity of the potential inequity to be found with the delegates that were going to be sent. I mean, this is going to be drawn from state senate districts. And if you're looking at Republicans right now and saying, you're going to be in charge of fundamentally changing the Constitution of New York, I'm not so sure that I can entrust you with that just yet. Again, that's, I think, where the Republican tag was a little bit more damning.
But Ben, ballot question two did win to allow judges to strip pensions from state employees who commit felonies pertaining to their jobs. And that's mostly targeted at corrupt politicians, so they could lose their pensions. So people did actually read the questions and made different choices.
Yes.
On question one and question two.
And question two is some of the lowest hanging fruit on ethics reform that you could possibly find. So, okay, that's passed and that's good, I suppose, generally speaking. And B, it's sort of this example of one of these types of items that a constitutional convention would have tried to make into a much more full agenda of ethics and government reform that now, with the constitutional convention failing and us not going through that experiment, we won't even get to see what sort of that full slate would have looked like. And we know that this type of incremental, slow change through the singular ballot proposals is the exact type of thing that the entrenched powers in Albany want the process to look like.
Deborah Lee, the city council speaker's race is the next thing up. And the Times today frames it as happening in a city council dominated by white men after Melissa Mark Viverito's tenure. And I think her tenure had a lot of impact. How might that define what council is next year compared to what it is today? And what does that mean to the people of the city?
Well, let's remember, too, that we've got a couple of city council candidates now, you know, essentially city council members who are going to be a little bit more conservative than we've seen this progressive body be. So you've got, for example, Reverend Diaz from the Bronx. You've got Mark Joni. These are folks who have identified themselves pretty readily in their districts, pretty openly, as a little bit more socially conservative than the progressive wing of the Democratic Party in the city. So that alone will complicate things on some levels. The idea that a man will, whether it's, you know, a man of whatever heritage, will again be at the helm, I think is dispiriting on a couple of different levels for people who were hoping that there would be a continuation with Julissa Ferreras Copeland. And certainly just that there's going to be a diminished female representation in the city council alone. So what does that mean ultimately? That means that people will do what they normally do and coalesce around the blocks that they do in Bronx and Queens, will sit down and hash it out. But let's see what happens also in Northern Manhattan. It's interesting to see Adonis Rodriguez and Mark Levine in, you know, pretty, I mean, they're essentially lying next to each other in terms of the districts. We'll see what happens with those constituencies start to kind of, you know, figure out where they want to be.
One last interesting thing. I got an email last night, maybe you're on this list too, from Mike Bloomberg's former communications person, Stu Lozer, who I guess still represents Bloomberg sometimes, pointing out that Bloomberg got more votes in his second term reelection than de Blasio got yesterday. Why would the Bloomberg camp even go there?
Well, I think in some ways there's always this Bloomberg de Blasio tension that has been apparent since de Blasio basically ran against the Bloomberg legacy in 2013. So I think they might be eager to point that out, although that's obviously a little bit silly considering the fact that in such a Democratic city, with someone running as an independent or on the Republican line, the Democratic turnout is going to sort of bolster the total vote in the city that way. I just want to add one more thing on the 2021 conversation. Stringer, Tish James, Ruben Diaz Jr., and obviously Eric Adams.
Those meaning are next mayoral race.
Yeah, but that starts today, basically, or in some ways it's already started. Those are the four basically definite candidates who will be running for mayor. There might be others like Hakeem Jeffries, like Melissa Mark Viverito, et cetera. But it'll be very, very interesting to see who sidles up to Bill de Blasio, as Tish James and Eric Adams already have to a larger extent, and who looks to differentiate themselves like Scott Stringer and Ruben Diaz Jr. have, and how that affects governing. I mean, that's the important thing here.
Gotham Gazette editor Ben Max, Deborah Lee Santos, editor of the Bronx Free Press and Manhattan Times, and New Jersey Public Radio managing editor Nancy Solomon. Thank you all so much.
You bet.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, Donna Brazile after this.